From the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
No fear, no fear, no fear, no fear here on Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, A, from the BEA UT Field Studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. Francis Boyle, who has worked with Paul Findlay, key author of the War Powers Resolution, and a leader in securing its enactment by overriding the veto of President Richard Nixon, for years, is a professor at the University of Illinois College of Law and author of Tackling America's Toughest Questions. He said today this could escalate in any number of ways, exactly what the War Powers Resolution was supposed to stop. It's not legitimate for the president or members of Congress to make arrangements that violate the Constitution and the War Powers Resolution. Obama just stated that the 300 U.S. troops would be doing training, and what he said and they said. And go. You know, it, War Powers Act. The War Powers Act, let's ask Professor Boyle to help us out with that. Professor, I want to understand the circumstances under which the War Powers Act came, what its limitations are, how it's supposed to be done, and how it gets ignored. You know, can you explain that for us, please?
Sure, Ernest, and thank you very much for having me on again. Well, it basically was the experience of the tragic experience of the Vietnam War, where one president after another, and especially President Johnson, just escalated all the way up the ladder of escalation to a point where he had 550,000 young men of my generation over there, 58,000 of whom were killed for nothing. Congress decided that this should not happen again, so they passed, technically it's called the War Powers Resolution. It's a joint resolution of Congress that was supposed to restrain incremental escalation or acts of war by a president.
Wait. But how? But it's not legislation. It's just a be it resolved. We'd prefer. I mean, is that what it is?
No. It is. It's a joint resolution of Congress has the same constitutional standing as an act of Congress. It was done as a joint resolution to indicate the seriousness. It was passed in identical language by both houses of Congress.
Okay, so then it had to go to the desk of President Nixon for him to sign, and he wouldn't sign, and then it was overridden.
That's correct. There was a veto override. It was a reaction to the Vietnam War, and unfortunately, presidents thereafter have violated it, and It's also more seriously a violation of the War Powers Clause of the U.S. Constitution, Article 1, Section 8, that says only Congress shall have the power to declare war. So I'm not just singling out President Trump here. President Obama was just as bad. And the results could be catastrophic, as we've seen now with Syria. And now with North Korea, where we could be at war with North Korea very soon. This is an accident, a catastrophe waiting to happen, and Congress isn't doing anything. They're just still out in the district and about to come back and exercising no restraint on President Trump, just as they exercise no restraint on President Obama.
Well, I'm I I had in the first hour some Fasters, Catholic Workers Initiative in the United Nations in New York, and they're protesting, and we don't want, you know, Yemen to be bombed and the children here. And then, but the problem to them was, you know, a system that doesn't work right for the people. It should do it the way that they wanted. And then I have Karen Kotowski on the last hour. And of course, she's understands that, you know, it's, you know, having government that, you know, the power to, like Goldwater thing, you know, you have a government powerful enough to give you everything you want, has power to take everything you have, you know. And so I'm wondering, in all of this with these acts and laws and pat, it's still my entire life, hell, probably yours, has been just at war all the time, and none of this stuff matters. It's just there's something else going on. There's some other force. There's some, you call it shadow government, deep state, they, them, those, won't leave us, something. There's something else going on. I'm hoping you can, from your experience, explain to me what the hell that is.
Well, to some extent, you're right that we, you know, President Eisenhower warned about this in his going away address, the power of the military-industrial complex, and that's really, it's now come to fruition where the situation is out of control, and it's up to us American people to bring it back into control, or else we're going to have a major war here. It could be with Russia and Syria. It could be with North Korea. We'll see a reimposition of the draft, and large numbers of young men, and this time young women, will be murdered for nothing. That's right. So it's really up to us, because
to what? I mean,
well,
Congress
has failed to discharge its responsibilities under the Constitution,
as they always have. So what is, you know? See, this is the one thing, Professor. I'm looking at, you know, where are the solutions? And what happens is a lot. We gotta you know, like vote somebody like Trump in. Yeah, he said he wouldn't do it, so we vote him in. Then it happens anyway. We need to get rid of these congressmen. We're gonna put in peace coalition of yeah, and they do it anyway. And then we're gonna. I'm just any kind of political activism seems like somebody hasn't shown me any supporting evidence that it's not a total waste of time. So I'm wondering.
What I think we need now, certainly, is massive turnouts in the streets of America, civil resistance, nonviolent, to make it clear to this administration that we do not want a war with North Korea that could draw in China.
Yeah.
And we do not want a war with Russia over Syria or Ukraine or the military buildup that is now going on in Eastern Europe. So we need a massive turnout of people in the streets. Politicians do pay attention to that.
When?
They paid attention to it during the Vietnam War. They paid attention to it, Reagan's war against Nicaragua. I was involved in both those efforts. Even Reagan himself paid attention to it on nuclear weapons and concluded the INF Treaty. So that is what politicians pay attention to, is people out in the streets.
Well, I remember 13, it was heavy, 50% no, 50% hell no, we're not going to Syria. And then I go, well, you think they stopped? You know, now we're back in Syria. You know, it's, you know, I remember in 03 when I first started doing radio, it was February of 03. We hadn't even gone into Iraq yet. There were more people in the streets protesting a war that hadn't even started yet than at the peak of the Vietnam War. And we went anyway. True or false?
Well, you're right about that. I was involved, you know, heavily in anti-war activities at that time, including efforts to get President Bush impeached in order to stop that war, and it turned out the Democrats headed that off. The problem here is the two-party system that, you know, it's like Tweedledum versus Tweedledee. And
Tweedledum really and Tweedledummer, man. I mean, it's just...
Right, well...
Yeah, this is, when we come back, Professor Boyle is going to, you know, walk us through what can be done. The war power, is it violated? What's the penalty for it? You know, now what? You know, this is... It's what's it going to take? Is us caring? You know, doing something? Do what? What haven't we done already? I don't know. We're going to find out. Professor's going to help us.
When it comes to investing in precious metals, you need a source you can trust who offers you choices and empowers you to maximize your wealth. That's where Roberts & Roberts Brokerage can help. Roberts & Roberts is a trusted name in precious metals. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts has been providing you with the finest gold and silver bullion, coins, rounds, and bars at genuine and honest prices. They make it easy to invest in precious metals and work with you to suit your investment needs. In addition to offering gold and silver for sale for U.S. dollars, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage is now accepting Bitcoin in exchange for their quality precious metals products. To speak with a professional from Roberts & Roberts about investing in precious metals, call toll-free 800-874-9760. Write this number down, 800-874-9760. Visit Roberts & Roberts online at rrbi.co. That's rrbi.co. On behalf of Roberts & Roberts, here's hoping your day is as good as gold.
Okay, Professor, when we come back, I'd still like to get some, what's the law say actually,
sure.
And what's the penalty and the repercussions of they can weaken some, it doesn't seem like, I don't think do whatever the hell they want and stopped anything from happening. I don't understand. I understand the intent, but I haven't seen it as a restraint on anything.
Well, I agree with you on that. The series of presidents, including Obama, who was behind me at Harvard Law School and knows better, he paid no attention at all to it. You're exactly right.
Yeah, it's just I get Gonzalez give me an opinion, and I can do whatever the hell I want. All right. But here, I'm looking at the headlines on Freedom's Phoenix, and it's one violation after another. They're going to do whatever the hell it is they're going to do. And then when you have, people really suffering and just needless death, dying, and destruction. Yeah, we're Sally Struthers out there raising money for starving Yemeni kids. I mean, it's like we've disengaged, which may not be a bad thing, that the people just disengaged from government because they got some people that hadn't voted. They felt that they were represented. We're finally going to get our say. They come out and we're going to get some Trump and same thing, Hell, more.
Well, you're right, and it was the same thing on Obama, right?
Yeah.
Everyone thought they were voting in a peace president, and they got a massive warmonger and war criminal, and it looks like Trump has hoodwinked them, too.
It shows that the people do care. That's why they use these issues to BS us into whatever. But if all the propaganda and national mandatory youth indoctrination camp programs didn't do what they needed done, I don't know what else they got to do. It seems to be working. The fact that people will go and argue for fixing it somehow or voting it or protesting it or something, like you're going to change their mind or something. Now, I don't see, or the people's will be done. Since when? I mean, my whole advocacy is I don't want to replace the government. I don't want to revel. I just want to ignore them. All right, here we're coming back. Here we go.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
All right, we got a War Powers Act. We went to Vietnam and the death, dying, and destruction and debt and went off the gold standard. Now we're going to pay and inflation and the Fed printing, doing kind of, and then started, kicked us off on what Eisenhower warned us about. The military-industrial complex was kind of a side effect of something else. He's going, we're going to be ruled by a scientific, technological elite. I got that. That was the real warning. And a side effect of that is this military-industrial complex thing. And, because we're going to be ruled by a scientific, technological elite. I guarantee they're going to do it with guns, because they can, and they're the government. And they got a hammer, and where's the nails? So I'm looking at Professor Boyle. I go, all right, Francis Boyle, explain to me. The War Powers Act had the ability, there had to be some kind of a enforcement clause or something in there, was there?
Regretfully, there was not, Ernest. I guess they figured future presidents would comply with the law. but there was no criminal penalty attached, and it was not tied into
impeachment
any,
or anything.
Spending limitation. Well, yes, you can impeach if you want to, and indeed,
but it doesn't trigger anything.
No, but it can trigger impeachment. For example, you know, if someone is upset right now, they could introduce a bill of impeachment against President Trump for his attack on Syria. I'm happy to work with any member of Congress willing to do that. I think it's a very dangerous situation, what's going on right now in Syria, and also North Korea. So you've got, you know, two, I would say, impeachable offenses right there. And there is value in introducing those resolutions. Back in Gulf War I, I worked with the late, great Congressman Henry B. Gonzalez on his impeachment campaign against Bush Sr. And we did introduce that into the House. And it turned out in his memoirs, Bush Sr. said that the reason he stopped the war at Basra and did not go to Baghdad was that he feared impeachment. So obviously we had an impact there. That could have been a total disaster if he had gone all the way to Baghdad like his son did. And now we see, you know, the results of what Bush Jr. did. It's total chaos over there. And Obama has drawn us back in. And it looks like Trump's going to make it worse.
You know, that's
the War Powers Resolution is designed to deal with these situations.
In what way? What is
Congress
it?
Is not doing it.
Well, what is it? I mean, anybody can do impeachment for anything they want. But, I mean, in the War Powers, there was no teeth in that. I mean, it's if you do this, this will spank your bottom. I mean, you know, there was nothing. It was just like, this is our preference, and we passed it, and vote for us because we're peace congressmen, and kind of okay, and it's all solved now. Right up until they want to do something, they did it anyway.
Well, they thought they had solved the problem, Ernest. If you go back and read the legislative history, they closed all the loopholes. They had studied quite carefully the entire history of presidents going off and attacking and invading countries and this, that, and the other thing. And they thought they had closed all the loopholes, but then they were dealing with presidents who just didn't care, both Democrats and Republicans. I'm not Obama, I think, attacked seven or eight different countries, and he was behind me at Harvard Law School, and he knows better. We went through the same program. So, you know, Trump didn't go to law school. Bush Jr. didn't go to law school. Obama did, and he did it anyway, and no one reined him in.
No, hell, he go to law school to figure out how to get around laws, you know?
I regret to say that, you know, Ernest, that's exactly what they teach you at Harvard Law School.
Damn Skippy.
That's,
you know,
correct.
They were going to argue both sides, and now we're going to get away with it.
You know, Harvard Law School is just a neoconservative cesspool. And Mrs. Clinton went to Yale Law School. I interviewed there for a job. They're just as bad. That's correct. All they do is try to teach you how to get around the law and how to get around the Constitution. And it gets back to your point about elites running this country. Under Obama, he had all these Harvard Law, Yale Law people working for him, and look what they did. It was a total disaster, and they all knew it was wrong. And if you don't believe me, read Charlie Savage's book, Power Wars, where you have all the Obama lawyers from Harvard and Yale Law School justifying one atrocity after another, including murdering United States citizens. So that's correct. I think a lot of people voted for Trump. I didn't vote for Trump, but I guess a lot of people voted for him because he was saying he was anti-elite, but and he was going to drain the swamp of these people. But unfortunately, it doesn't look like he has.
It's even worse.
100 days into the administration, and I regret to say it looks like business as usual.
He got inaugurated on Friday. They were drone striking Yemen on Saturday. You know, it's just I you know that there were discussions and plans and stuff during the transition period, so he didn't waste any. It wasn't like they did it to surprise him. But there's so much influence in the White House from a dark side. I was sharing with Karen Katowski this. I'll share it with you because it doesn't seem like a lot of people know it. You know, the headline goes, exposed. George Soros's long and productive relationship with Jared Kushner includes new $250 million investment. So here's Kushner, his son-in-law, and his daughter Ivanka are in the White House, and so Soros is in the White House. How's that? Real deal.
Soros is corrupt as all get out. There's no question at all about it. You certainly can't trust him, and it looks like he's in cahoots with Kushner and Ivanka. Right,
They have a group called Cadre. It is a venture capitalist, real estate, whatever thing that's run by Jared and his brother Joshua Kushner that has $259 million line of credit provided by George Soros. I don't know how much influence in the White House you need more than that. I mean, and we're done. So is this brought up by the left? You know, you have the anti-war left, progressive Hillary people going, George Soros is really in the White House with, you know, Jared, his son-in-law. Not a word. They're all part of the
correct.
Same thing.
That's right. That the Obama gutted and destroyed the entire peace movement here and co-opted it here in the United States. There are very few voices out there who opposed what Obama was doing, and then they all supported Clinton in her campaign. And of course, Clinton was a psychopath and a war criminal. You know, quote, "We came, we saw, he died." Unquote. After Gaddafi was sodomized with a knife and beaten to death, she's a sick person. Clinton is sick and demented. She. Probably be doing a lot worse than Mr. Trump right now, between you and me.
Yeah, no, that wouldn't surprise me. I don't see there's a difference, though. I mean, we're at the edge of all kinds. We haven't even got into North Korea, China, Russia, Ukraine, you know, Libya selling slaves on the street now. We got Yemen going. I mean, could it have gotten worse? It looks like it is. War Power Act?
I love my magic mud.
I drink.
Yeah, the War Power, it's not. I mean, I understand the sentiment. And this reminds me, you know, I do recall last time you were on the show last year, it was, you were looking for, you know, congressmen you'd help and work with on, you know, impeachment proceedings. We can do the War Power. You're ready to go. I am a resource. Professor Boyle's going to help you out. We're going to get her done. Get down. And I'm like, I'm not seeing that coming even from the left. The Democrats got all in line. Yeah, you know, Sieg Heil Trump, you know, he's a good guy now. CNN is going, oh, he's presidential. He just became president because he bombed people in Syria. I'm going, where does this come from?
Well, I guess the two-party system, which, as you correctly pointed out, is Tweedledum versus Tweedledreed between you and me. And unfortunately, people put their party loyalty ahead of their loyalty to the Constitution and the rules of law here in the United States of America. I've always been a political independent. I try to call them as I see them. You can hear now my comments I've made about both Obama and Clinton. But I regret to say large numbers of so-called self-styled liberals fully supported Obama attacking seven different countries and destroying Libya, turning it into total chaos, killing 50,000 people over there, and also supporting Obama murdering United States citizens. I was no supporter of President Bush Jr. either. I tried to get him impeached, but even President Bush Jr. never publicly asserted some so-called right to murder United States citizens, as Obama did and his attorney general and many of his legal hatchet people. So that's where we were with Obama, and the Clinton people were just as bad. It was just the recycled Obama people.
Yeah, it's amazing to me. I tell you my concern, professors, is that when I interview people my age and older, I'm 56, so I'm not a kid, but, you know, I used to be. I mean, everybody looking, oh, you kid, you don't get it. And I'm in my late 20s when I first started being an activist in 88. Then, you know, 90s, I'm heavily involved in my 30s. And you got, you know, 40s, and you go through, you know, various businesses, and at a restaurant, and you do and you go through life and everything. And I'm just going, the idea that a lot of people, and I think it's a generational thing, you know, my elders, that believe in, but it's written on a piece of paper. Like the Constitution is, I mean, if it didn't, you know, cause it, it sure as hell didn't prevent what's happening. And I'm just, we got to get back to the piece of paper. And I'm going, it's not working. It's not working. That piece of paper represented an ideology or a philosophy or an opinion of the people that they've beaten out of us. And just, heck, I just, you know, freedom's the answer. What's the question? Can I just be left alone? Now, you guys go be communist all you want. Can I be left alone? No, because no. And this philosophy is going to change because it's not working. So I'm, you know, to what? Are we going to do better? Is it against all flags kind of thing? Or, you know, I'm trying to find a solution, but going back, we got to get back to the Constitution doesn't work. And I need you to, when we come back, you know, explain how, you know, we should strive towards what. You know, I don't know. I mean, we'll find out. Here we go.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
You know, I'm just wanting to, if we're going to go back towards, when did it ever work? I mean, I'm it's just, you know, once he created, the first thing they did is go into debt with the Bank of England right after the ink wouldn't even dry on the Constitution. And we have a debt, you know. And it just kept getting worse. It's always been an argument between, like, you know, Hamilton and Jefferson on, you know, the supremacy of the individual versus, no, the state and war power, we're going to kick ass. And this has never stopped. It's just how big and capable the state, the more productive we were by being left alone, and the economic, you know, explosion that happened in North America and the United States was based on because the government was too small to do anything to stop it. They just kept trying to get more and more and more. Now they've gotten to the point in technology where, ooh, we're going to get everything. Well, you know, we got to get back to the original. Do we even remember what that was? And how are we going to use this democracy or voting or this system or the judicial I'm wondering where our salvation is, Professor Boyle. I mean, it's got to be something somewhere. And what is it? I help me out.
Well, you know, I'm not a priest or a bishop or anything like that, Ernest. All I can say, you know, it's really up to us American citizens to get organized. And in particular, I think right now, given the imminence of war in both Syria and North Korea, we need large numbers of people to take to the streets with peace demonstrations and make it clear to Trump that we don't want war. That did happen with Obama. You remember he came up with his completely bogus red lines that and large numbers of people took to the streets and Obama backed down. So we can't have an impact. But it's, you know, people are going to have to go to the streets, peaceful, nonviolent, civil resistance, and make it clear that we don't want another war. If we don't do that, we're going to have another war, and I'm afraid it's going to be catastrophic.
Well, I'm tired of
doing
it.
I have to go. Ernest, I agreed for
A half hour. I apologize.
Here.
Thank you.
No,
thank
that's
you.
Fine. You're raising very important issues. I did write two books on this, you know,
please,
if you're interested.
Pimp your books.
It's called Defending Civil Resistance Under International Law, where I argue the right of the people, First Amendment rights to engage in civil resistance, and also another book, Protesting Power, War, Resistance, and Law, where I, you know, develop these ideas and why they are based on the Constitution. And at the end of the day, it's really up to us. Either we get organized, we get out in the streets, or you're correct, the system's out of control. Yeah.
Thank you, Professor, for spending time with us. I appreciate it. Thank you, sir. Goodbye.
Well, thanks for having me on, Ernest.
You bet.
My best wishes to you and your listening audience.
You bet. Bye-bye. Yeah, I apologize. I forgot that he agreed to just do a half hour. The today's show is a frustration-laden of exactly what I would think a lot of people's problem is. Who did we have on? We had, you know, Catholic Workers Group, which is they want more government to fix and we're not being ruled right. They're advocating, of course, that we have all these death, dying, and destruction and people being victimized, and we should stop doing that. Oh, and then it goes a step further is that we're a rich country that we should be taking from those that have more and redistributing kind of thing. Yeah, there's wars fought over that ideology. Then Karen Katowski, probably closest to my philosophy and just her experience being inside the beast, inside the Pentagon. Hell, it, you know, next to the Office of Special Plans where Cheney and Rumsfeld walking by or sitting right there, the whole she saw what was happening. Now, she was writing about it, too, under a pseudonym, a male pseudonym. They thought it was a guy. It never occurred to them it was the woman that was sitting right there. And a lot of this I talked to her about, I go, God, was this secret? Did you do it? He goes, no, my co-worker, people knew. You know, I was, you know, I expressed my concern about what the hell. And it's just, government, the only thing that we got going for us is that they're just doing stupid stuff. And stupid stuff doesn't keep getting done. And, but it causes a lot of damage in the process. Then Professor Boyle, and I remember the conversation we had last time we had him on a year or two ago. And it was, you know, we got to use the system. You know, we can do impeachment proceedings. I can help with that. Got a congressman. You got one. You know, I help you write it, man. We'll go kick some butt and get some. Well, I'm not seeing it. It has been for my entire life negotiating with a psychopath. You know, it's trying to make a deal with someone that's already know they're not going to honor the deal. They're going to screw you out of whatever. They're going to do it right from the beginning. They already know that they're lying to you. Hell, most of the people that's making a deal with them know they're lying anyway. Hell, they put them up to be the ones to be able to be lied to. You know, I'm tired of the lies and the secrets, uncovering the secrets, exposing the lies. What's the solution? I'm tired of propping them up. I'm tired of engaging with they, them, those. I'm tired of, you know, giving them any of my attention and deference and treasure and energy. I'm tired of it. I want to advocate for something else. The supremacy, the independence, the ingenuity, the capability, the knowledge, the education of, the empowerment of the individual. And when you hear Francis, you know, Professor Boyle say, you know, we got to get people in there. We got to come together around something. You know, it happens all the time. I tell you, you know, the Trump thing was a phenomenon that, you know, a lot of people are right. They got people that weren't voting out to vote. Why? Because they thought they were being represented. We're going to get, you know, the against the establishment billionaire, if that's even possible, you know, to advocate for us. America first. Make America great again. America first. America. You know? I still don't know what his America, what that means. Is it a geography? Is it a culture? A people? A, you know, USA Inc.? I mean, what is it? An Air Force? I mean, I don't know. You know, great. What is that? Yep, we dropped some big bombs and we did bombs and tomahawks and bombs. We must be great again. Oh, now we're great now. Look at how many, you know, little mushroom clouds we did. Is that it? Is there a hole inside? You know, I remember there was a an effort to pay, and then eventually they did. We filed suits, and I did in the Court of Appeals, and I was being a butthead about them spending unconstitutionally as hell. It was obvious, but again, it doesn't matter. We just made them say it in building the football and baseball stadiums here. And the point that we were making is that it's just discretionary income. It's taxes, or you're going downtown to spend money, or you had it diversified more in the restaurants and other entertainment out here that didn't get subsidized by the government. And so we're making an economic issue and a moral issue about how it is that you're stealing my money to, you know, build this edifice to professional sports because you have a hole in your chest, you know, that you can't fill unless you have a stadium or a sports team or something. I mean, you know, that, how come it's not an economic decision? How come we don't have enough market? Well, then don't do it. You know, they did it with the hockey team, the Phoenix hockey team here, the Coyote, whatever the heck it is. They got trouble, man. They're losing gazillions of dollars a year. Man, the government's on the hook to make up for it, for them staying here. Put a deal in. If you don't make enough money, we just said, here's $40 million from the city of Glendale for putting the stadium here. You know, peace out. What? What? You know, and we knew that the Diamondbacks, they second year they opened it, they won the World Series against the Yankees and still went broke. Because we knew you had to have $48 per seat for every sold-out seat game. The math didn't work. It doesn't matter. And there was a legislator at the time, Rusty Bowers, I remember he goes, there's a hole in our chest that we feel we must build bread and circuses or have a circus or a circus tent or whatever to fill. There's something as a community that we're not everybody, but enough, you know, and certainly leadership and those in government, there's some hole that can never be filled because they are so, I don't know, this lack of self-esteem, self-confidence, self-something, they got, or is it just graft? Is it just greed? Well, what empowers that? This collective, we get to take your money thing. Where does it stop?
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened.
If you enjoy LRN.FM, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads. Oh!
I'm wondering out loud with the audience and everyone, my friends, family. I talk, it's Easter, and don't ask him any questions. Somebody come up, so what are you doing this for? And everybody goes, no, don't ask him a question. That'd be bad. Well, how do you do your elevator speech thing? How do you zip it down to, you know, this about that? Oh, it's just I do this. A new neighbor comes up and they, you know, same thing. You know, everybody's afraid. Oh my God, they're going to ask him a question. Hell, he's going to go tell him anyway. So how do you sum up what we do in just one, you know, 30-second elevator speech? You know, what is it? I just, you know, freedom's the answer. What's the question? Yeah, but don't you think you don't want to have chaos. You don't want to have, you know, people out of control. And the thought probably they've been beaten into our heads that if we're not in control of someone else, then you're out of control of someone else. I mean, you know, as if that was a bad thing. Last night we did a podcast, before we actually launched the first letter of Mark and finish up some stuff on the Pirates Without Borders site and everything, I wanted to make sure I had some good minds and kind of go over line by line of stuff that we weren't making a, you know, glaring error in rhetoric or principle or anything. So we had Derek Slopey from Maine, the IT guy, and Alien Seed, he's agoristhosting.com out of Maine that has our servers in Canada and other places, undisclosed, and does a great job there, included in the conference. Davi Barker, of course, he does a lot of the art and so on, and has the tone and the philosophy down, and I like his writing. He you know, takes the right tone for what we're trying to do, be educational, fun, principled. Ben Stone, you know, the bad Quaker, he wrote a book, Sedition, Subversion, and Sabotage. It was kind of, you know, here it comes. And, you know, if we're going to engage the state, we might as well know what we're going up against and how to do it and kick butt. And that was an interesting book. And he has Room for Freedom. You know, it's kind of like an Airbnb, but without servers. And that's coming on. He's doing the Indiegogo on that. So solutions. I like solutions. And then James Babb from Philadelphia, you know, you got to have James Babb in there. You know, make sure you're doing it right. And he's going to – Porkfest starts on Wednesday this year. The interest or attendance early on has gone down. So he's like, yeah, we like doing the full week. Hey, it's nice to be there a couple of days before everything gets stupid, you know, and you know, just relax and camp a little bit with the family. So he's going to have a Somalia pirate party, you know, an actual party, you know, for a couple of days. It'll be, yeah, we're going all pirate, you know. And so at Porkfest in the Sunday through Wednesday or something like that. So we'll talk more about that as it gets closer. But with their input, I feel better about this. And the first couple of paragraphs I want to go over here on the first letter of Mark, Captain Mark, Mark and Reprisal, Captain Mark. He's our M-A-R-Q-U-E, the first letter of Mark. You know, what would he say? Humanity, and I'll describe, you know, each one of these paragraphs so you'll understand from our perspective. And hopefully we're not going to have to do a lot of explanation, but that's what the forums are for on piratswithoutborders.com. And we'll start doing radio advertising. We'll start promoting that. You know, Ben's going to be, you know, reading some passages and so on. We'll make a big deal. We're developing it. You know, it's getting ready to go. I was hoping that we'd launch it by today, but we still got some store stuff to do and some, you know, merchandise coming in and so on. Humanity's long pursuit of freedom is full of desperate complaints against the crown. Rulers and subjects alike have penned countless flowery documents claiming to limit the crown's hostility with signed agreements. But today, any observer can see that all of these poetic social contracts have been impotent to prevent the crown's predation, or worse, they have authorized it. Those they propped up as our liberators are now subsisting on our bondage. Limited government is a lie they cultivated to keep us submissive. Now, that's the first paragraph. And the one thing that we went over last night, I'm going rulers and subjects. I'm like, I hate this subject thing. Who made them a subject? Well, he goes, no, what Davi was talking about, he's going rulers and subjects, you know, alike. They both have penned all these different documents that they agree to, you know, we'll do this if you do that, and here's the deal and constitution. And the crown is always lying before they even, you know, signed it. They signed it before the ink is dry. They're already, you know, demonstrated they didn't give a crap what it said. So it's like this constitution that we're held to. Yeah, you're going to have these rulers. Yeah, they're going to be this way. Yeah, you can vote and do and kind of all that, but you're going to have rulers and you're going to get ruled. You know, to say, nope, it's constitutional. Supreme Court, black robes being paid by the government, you know, threw down the gavel and said, yep, they can do that, so I guess they can do that. Well, I say they can't do that. It says they're doing, you're not a Supreme Court justice, so what do you know? I'm tired of negotiating with psychopaths, sociopaths, bad, kind of, ew, pointy horn, pointy blip, dripping blood, fang, teeth, pointy tail people. I mean, these are not people with your interest in mind. It's theirs. And it's all these documents and these laws and everything is just to get around it. Hell, they got words in to get around big giant loopholes, you know, and even if they don't have a loophole, they either make one or ignore it anyway. Quit going into these contracts and social contract mentality. I didn't sign it. What am I socially allowed to not socially be a socialist? I just, there needs to be, and that's what today's show kind of demonstrated, is this philosophy, this idea that you own yourself is lost. It's just lost. It's not even in there. Goes on, stripped of its grandiose rhetoric, the essence of the crown has always been rule by force. Every euphemism has only enshrined the violence inherent in the system, embodied not only by the enforcers, But in every courthouse, school, post office, everywhere the Crown tells you obey or else. Well, I've had enough of centralized force. I mean, does that ring true to anybody? It's just, you obey or else what? Or else whatever the hell we fill in the blank with. We'll make it up. You know, and it's always not that you were you were bad. That's not what really gets the men in black with the curly, cords going in their ear and the sunglasses on, the mirror sunglasses. That's not what gets them going. It's when you challenge the system itself. Oh, man, la machine comes out. And I don't want to fight their machine. I am no revolutionary. I have no desire to reform your system or run it my way. If you want your servile life, keep it. But know that the Crown can never be trusted to abide by its founding charters, nor to keep its treaties, nor even to play by its own rules. Put simply, the Crown cannot be trusted. That's why I raise my black banner. Why I'm opting out. I just want to opt out. I'm opting out. You're not allowed to. Okay, well, I'm going to try anyway. How much can you opt out? Can you plant a tomato plant? Can you decentralize your energy a little bit, get a freaking solar panel to power your laptop or something? Do something. Earn your bones. Now, that's one of the things we have the pins, each of these categories that, you a pirate in communication? Are you a pirate in shelter? Are you a pirate in transportation? Are you a pirate? Are you doing Lazoos or you're doing, Arcade City or something? You're giving rides to people using Bitcoin, your smartphone of no central command? Even the Uber is too centralized. Airbnb and the man knows who went where. They want to know where you're traveling. You're sleeping. They want to know where you're sleeping. So what happens when you have room for freedom that doesn't have that? It's just, hey, this guy has and this guy wants to do, and boom, you got a ranking system between the two, and it's private, and nobody knows you did it, if ever. Boom, done. I see this as it's the future, and if we don't embrace it, you're going to miss it. There's going to be lots of opportunity, lots of resource, lots of money, lots of, chances for you to be able to express yourself and your support of a decentralized life. If you don't know how to do it, if you don't know that it's out there, if you don't know there's a market for it, if you don't know there's a community to take advantage of, if you don't know, you're going to miss it. I remember when eBay started. Wow, you can have your own business online. Boom, man, regulation. Now Etsy, creative, stuff that you can put up again. The man's going to get that one too. Pinterest. Hey, can I just share an idea in a web page? Yeah, a lot of people use that. What's the next one? Craigslist. They got to go after Craigslist and tax, transactions or something. You watch. But there are so many signs of us opting out. It's creating its own worldwide country.